Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for 30 to 45 minutes. At our speaker's discretion, we may invite questions from the audience up to 10 minutes before. We begin the discussion portion of our meeting. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker, Sonia from Fresno.
That was cool. Yeah, all right. My name's Sonia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sonia.
Like I was saying, it's my first time speaking, so I tried to take notes, and nothing came out. Nothing. So I just prayed, and hopefully you get a message from me today. My very first drink, I was 12 years old. I've been always attracted to alcohol. There was this bottle in our garage, and it said Presidente. And for some reason, I thought, you know, that's like really expensive stuff and really good stuff. And it never moved down. It just stood at the same level. And I walked by it every single day. I'd get up when everyone would leave the house, and I'd go stare at it and walk back into my room. And eventually, I was able to get to that bottle, and I poured my very first coffee cup full of, and it was brandy, didn't know what I was drinking. And, you know, I was with three other girls, and they were like, I don't want to do that, and well, I'll try it. And I said, okay, so I poured it, and I grabbed it, and I drank the whole cup.
Sounds good.
I remember putting the bottle back, and then that's it. I woke up in my mom's bed, and my hair was braided, and I was wearing her clothes. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? She didn't say anything. I was raised by an alcoholic. My mother is not. She's a normie. She can go years without drinking if she really wanted to. If you're raised by an alcoholic, or if you are an alcoholic with children, you know it gets a little crazy in there. So I did have a very hectic life, but I do remember such great memories with my mom. I don't ever want to just like put all this dark into my life, because I did have a good life, but all this bad just outweighed it. I didn't see it, and so at a very young age. You know, I saw a lot of violence, and when I became strong enough, I guess, I decided I'm going to stand up for my mom. And so a lot of that led up to my dad being violent towards me, and I would get yelled at to go to my room, you should just mind your business, and I just cried myself to sleep. And so this is right around the time I started to rebel. And so when I was really, really little, I used to like get so stressed out and cut myself with my fingernails. And my mom would be like, stop doing that. Don't do that. And I would get so frustrated and so scared, or so just so much anxiety. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And but it was the way I was reacting towards, you know, the way I was living. So when I brought up that time when I blacked out, I wanted you to know that part, because I learned to check out. It was the first time I learned to check out. And I never stopped checking out after that. As soon as I learned to check out, I tried checking out with weed. Didn't really work. I easily graduated to a cranked crystal meth. That's a whole other story. You know, every time we had an incident at home, and I think it was because I had an alcoholic father, we would, the next day, act like nothing ever happened. I mean, I don't care if there's broken holes or doors or whatever, act like nothing ever happened. And so that became such a normal thing when I got in trouble. And, you know, eventually, I did keep rebelling, and I ended up going, running away, staying in the streets, sleeping in parks, bus stops, people's trap houses. I mean, it was crazy. At the time, you know, I thought I was living the life. But I would steal from grocery stores, and all I wanted to do was just get high. Eventually, my mom got found me. I don't know, my mom can find anyone. If you need to find somebody, you can hit up my mom. Like, seriously, she will find anything if you lost something. And she found me, and she got me home, and they pulled my door down, and they would, like, I would try to cut the screen of the shower. I would turn the shower on, and I would try to jump out the shower window. And I already had a guy in a truck, like a diesel, ready to pick me up, and my backpack outside, and I was ready. I didn't even know where I was going. I just knew I needed to get out of this house and get back out there so I can get high. Eventually, I got pregnant. I met this guy, my best friend's brother, and he was like the man of my dreams. Why? Because he was this gangster, and he drank like me. And he loved the way I drank. It turned him on, like how much I can drink and sit there. And I used to laugh because I was like out drink people and then do my ABCs backwards. And well, I would do all just to show off how much I can tolerate at such a young age. And so then eventually I got pregnant. And right away I was, you know, staying with him. And that's when my drinking just really took off. I mean, you think right before I got pregnant, we used to drink whiskey through a beer bong. You know, just chug the whole thing. And there were so many times where I just remember taking shots and just waking up. And it was like my life the whole time until I got pregnant. I got pregnant and just didn't touch anything. It was weird because I didn't have to detox or anything. And I got sober because I had a baby. And I didn't touch anything until probably he was almost one. I was breastfeeding too. Well, for, you know, since I have daddy issues, apparently, this guy, I ended up marrying him, the father of my child, and the drinking just got a lot more dangerous. So my first bottom, I'm going to tell you, I was 21 years old. We had been binge drinking, and this was day three, and we're house sitting. It's like the worst people to house sit for you. I mean, we tore this house the fuck up. And I had the baby, so he was already, like, he was still in the car seat. And so I remember, he was big. I had to still see him in the car seat. And I remember telling my husband at the time, don't go get another bottle. Like, we're done. And he's like, no, I'm going to go get one more. And so we started fighting. He went and got one more. He came back. I was like, I can't believe it. They're like three bottles more than me. But I'm drunk. I'm definitely drunk. I've been binging for 3 days. So I'm not innocent at all. And the fighting between he and I got to the point. And by the way, I'm just giving you a description. This was a very violent marriage, of course. We both drank. We beat each other up. I'm not always the victim. I can't say that. But, you know, something I was accustomed to, I was used to. So in this incident with him and I fighting, he started beating my ass. And I remember his best friend was trying to stop him, and he ran over there, and I remember he pushed him and told me run, and I got up what I could and I grabbed my son, and my ex-husband knocked him out, and I ran to my car, and my husband at the time ran to me. And by the way, I got married right at 18 years old. I had to get out of that house. I was out by 16 most of the time. And when he ran towards me, the doors were closed. He couldn't get in. So I turned the car on, and I hit drive, and he jumped on the car. And, like, this is happening so fast. So I'm literally running to the car. He's chasing me. I just throw my kid turn the car on, and as soon as I turn the car on and about to bolt, he jumps on top of it. And I just was so angry at this man that I hit the gas pedal so hard that I, and then all of a sudden, I hit the brakes. This man, he flew off my windshield, my hood, and cracked his head. I gave him a brain injury. I got him into the car, and when I got him to the car, the ambulance ended up eventually coming, and I called my mom, and I said, "Mom, I need you to come pick up the baby. I'm about to go to jail." She's like, "What'd you do?" I go, "I almost killed him." And she's like, "I'm be on my way." And the cops pull up, and I got him into the car, and he gets out the car, and he's standing there. And right when the cops pull up, he, like, is standing there, and he falls again and hits his head on the street. Second time. Now this man's bleeding out his nose, his eyes, his ears. And the cops saw, and he goes, "Sonia." And I looked, and I was like, he goes, "You're still with him?" And it was the cop. He had been in so many domestic violent calls with me. And he was like, he looked at me, and then the ambulance got there, and they said, "What happened?" or whatever. And all these witnesses, you know, were like, he was like, "That guy fell on his head. I saw him." And he goes, you're all high. And, you know, I was drunk. And I'm just like, now I'm detoxing. I'm like withdrawing and having anxiety and stuff. And I get to the hospital. And it was crazy. I had the whole fucking family off ready for my head. That was my first real bottom, and that did not stop me from drinking. It did scare me. It got me sober for at least 2 years. I was dry. No help, no nothing. I do remember vaguely walking into an AA meeting one time, and I was too drunk to comprehend things, and I left. We had another incident where we picked up again after in our little time of 2 years sobriety, and we picked up again, and as soon as we picked up, he started seizing, and he went on grand mal seizure again. I didn't even get to that point. When the first incident, he was in ICU, he was in coma, he was on life support, he was incubated, and I was put in a room saying that my husband is not going to survive. And that really, really killed me for a couple years. And it still bothered me for a long time. I try to stay sober on my own, try to stay sober through church. God tried to get really close to God. I was teaching Bible study. I just wanted to get pregnant because I was like, I got my husband back, got a new life, we're sober, I'm going to have a baby, and everything's going to be perfect. And then I started getting my ass beat again, sober. So it kind of turned my back against God. I remember when it happened. I couldn't get up, and we were fighting about something. And I heard the baby, and he was like wanting to argue with me. And then he threw me down. And I had staples all across me because I just had a baby. And I went to get up, and then he kicked me in the chest and knocked me down. And I had this, like, weird thing in me that to where I was like, I've put God in front of everything. And I was worshiping, and I was praying, and I was on my knees, and, like, why am I still getting beat? And then why am I going to go home? My dad's still a drunk and abusive. And I was kind of just stuck for a while. And then that's when I picked up again. And I did that. I drank until I started acting out. I didn't give a fuck about him anymore. I was going to college. I was bartending, waitressing. I was working so much, going to college, being a mom, and all this, I'm a functioning alcoholic, you know? I'm doing pretty good taking care of the home and still drinking. And because of the incident, my ex-husband had no sense of smell. Both of my children are both miracle babies. My first one, I was, I woke up from a being choked out, and by his mom, she woke me up, and she said, you're okay, and I was like, looking right at her in her eyes, and she goes, we need to go to the hospital, and I eventually had my first son, and the second one too, it wasn't as violent as that one, but I think I got it worse when he came out of my stomach. So I grew with a lot of pain. I was just so accustomed to violence. If you had raised your voice, and I wasn't like, my PTSD isn't like, oh, I'm scared. My PTSD is a fight. I would be very, very violent. Especially if you're a man, I'm grabbing a chair. I'm grabbing a pan. I'm grabbing something. I'm not going to, you know. And it was because of that type of environment. But I was still, I never focused on what I was doing throughout this time is, you know, I was completely coasting with life and accepting this kind of lifestyle. I was accepting this kind of chaos constantly and continuously, thinking that this is okay. Blacking out every night. And eventually, we finally split up. And that's when my drinking really took off. I was a bar manager, so I had access to the liquor. So, and you think, oh, the liquor cabinets. Like, no, I go to liquor distributor companies, and I got to get a grocery cart and fill it up and go to the front and show them my ID, and they sign an account. And talk about, you know, heaven. Oh, it was awesome. I did that for 5 years. It was that's how I drank, and I drank really good stuff, and I loved to party, and you saw this girl living on her own, you know, she's working full time. I have money. I don't even have money in the bank. I'm spending it all. I hid money because I was such a paranoid freak all over my house. And I would forget because I was so drunk. And I was always thinking people were going to steal my money. And it was fucking weird. I wasn't even on dope anymore. Eventually, so I tried to quit myself. My way of doing it was, okay, instead of drinking today, I'm going to take, that was the first time I tried narco. And it was great for me that day. I got energy, I didn't feel hungover, and I was like, this is cool, I like this. And then eventually I graduated to OxyContin. And at the end of my pills, well, if I wasn't high that day, that means I had to drink. There was no other choice. And it was at least 2 bottles, at least 2 liters. And if it wasn't those 2 bottles, it was a pack of 99s, my 12-pack of 99s, because they're 100 proof. I go by proof. I didn't ever like to drink anything cold. I used to be pissed. Don't give me anything cold, it's because it needs to hit my small intestines as fast as possible. Fast as possible. And ice just gets in the way anyway. You know? So, after I stopped working there, COVID happened, and it was probably like 5 days of drinking and me getting feeling so shitty to where the next day I'm doing pills to feel better, but it wasn't what I wanted. Like, I'm sorry, like, I'm going to disappoint everyone again today. It was like, I'm not going to, it can never be like a couple, you know? I knew once I'm like, fuck, I'm going to end up blacking out again. And I mean, I was the blackout queen. You talk about all this tolerance. Well, at the end of my drinking, I just couldn't stop blacking out. It got to where the binge that I blacked out, it was Christmas Eve. All the way, it was about 16 days that I was sitting at a table eating pizza with my ex-sister-in-law, my ex-husband, and I'm like, why am I with you guys eating pizza? Where am I? It, like, I finally had a moment to, like, what the fuck's going on? And why are we all chilling like this, you know? Where are my kids? And I realized I lost days. I had been driving a car. I had been going and getting hotel rooms. I had been going. I was living a life. I had no idea who was possessing me at that time. That's fucking scary. So then I got sick. I ended up moving out of my mom's and just really telling her, you know, I have a problem, and you think I would get better, but no, it got worse. It was like, you think you're helping them, but you're just killing them. You have no idea how much you're killing them. And I got to the point where I went to the bathroom, and I mean, I would literally lay in my bed and try to stay in my room as long as possible and sneak to the store. I mean, I would go to the store. You don't even know where I live. I live in the east side of Fresno, and I would go to the store way on Jensen because they're not close. They stay open all night, and the other store closed at 11. And I'm fucking running because no one in the house knows I'm out there trying to get a drink. And I'd come in, and no one have any idea. And I have the best party in my room, getting drunk and fucked up all by myself, crying, laughing, living the life. And what? I got yellow. So my eyes began to turn yellow, and my skin got yellow. And what was weird, and I think because I'm brown, the right under my eye was white on both of them. I thought that was kind of weird. You touched me, and I could see the white come back. And it was this one time that I had woken up, and I was so shocked that I woke up because I had no more alcohol, and I just took what I had, what pills I had, and that was the same bag of pills that killed somebody 3 days before from fentanyl overdose, and I knew it, and I still took it, and I just, because I didn't have alcohol. That was my love. That's what I want. I want to be drunk. And it just, like, didn't do it. And I ended up getting up, getting a whole bottle of Jameson. And I thought I had left some for the morning, but I woke up and it was gone. And I was, when I realized I was awake, I realized I fucking lived through that right now. Like, I was supposed to be dead at what I just did right now. And my stomach hurt because I'd feel my bladder, because I would just lay there and I'd never want to get up and go pee. And finally I had to get up and go pee, and I started crying because I had to get up and go pee. And I went to go pee, and that's when I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, damn. I didn't recognize myself at all. I didn't, you know, I didn't intend to become this woman who was addicted and an alcoholic. I didn't intend to waste 31 years, and, you know, just waste away like that. And because I just looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, I need help. I'm not even worried about my kids. And I called Kaiser and they said they can get me a bed, and they got me a bed right away. Cool. That's over with, that part. I went into an inpatient program, and I stood there. It was supposed to be 30 days, but I signed a paper saying I will not be released until the doctor releases me. And they ended up holding me for 90 days. At the time, I was 31, and I had just learned not too long ago before that I was diagnosed as bipolar 2. So I do have mental illness. And I do date hypomania, and I do a lot of shit that I would normally not do, but it's, at the time, it's fun. And then I do get depressed for long periods of time. And then I had no idea what was going on, and I was self-medicating myself. I don't say that I'm an alcoholic because I'm bipolar, because I don't believe that. I've believed that I'm an alcoholic because it's in my genes. I knew really young how beautiful that fucking bottle was, you know. And so I stood in this place, this inpatient. It was during COVID, so I never had gone to an AA meeting, like a real one, sober, and sat through it or whatever. I didn't know. I learned about steps there, but they weren't really programmed. I don't understand why they didn't. They did tell us, you know, like to go to AA and all that stuff. And I got a lot of therapy. It was a dual diagnosed place. So I do want to state on that part that, you know, if you do have any mental illness, or, you know, first of all, we're all fucked up. Go get help. God gave us a brain, and it does say that in the big book. Use it. There's doctors out there that can save us and help us. There's medications. I'm not going to get into the medication part, but there are medications that are not non-narcotic, and I believe that you need to seek help. There's such a bigger problem than, oh, I just have an allergy. Yes, you have an allergy. But if the power of the mind is so amazing, once you get a hold of this power, you know, and realize, like, I can control how I react to what you're doing, I should accept, it's hard to accept people. That's a big thing. And one of the things I wanted to state about that part is because, let's see if I can fucking find it, because I didn't take no notes. When I started doing my step work, the first thing they asked me to do was write up all the times your life was unmanageable. And it went all the way till I was a kid. From the first time I had a drink. Every incident, everything bad that happened to me or around me or that I did, there was alcohol. Most of the time I was fucked up and I did it, but if it wasn't me, it was someone else, or we were all fucked up and it was, the alcohol was there. And it is, I'm not even going to get to that part. But I wanted to mention that, how did I get through some of the things that happened to me? And a lot of, you know, I'm not fifth stepping here, so I'm not giving you things that are very, very hard for me to talk about. But you're more than welcome to ask me one-on-one. There is sexual abuse and certain things. I have extreme violence. If you have anything you want to talk about, more than welcome to talk to you after the meeting. But I wanted to bring up this part on page 544. And that's why it's good to read the whole book, not just the first page, 164 pages. Read the whole book. You will find your story more than once. And I feel like I have to explain this, is that history proves conclusively that my drinking was a symptom of a deeper trouble. I am a result of the way I reacted to what happened to me as a child. I may experience a change in this reaction pattern that will indeed allow me to match calamity with serenity. And that's when I get into acceptance. One thing I had to accept was that very first thing is I'm an alcoholic. There is no way, no how, I can ever have just one. Not a sip, not a lick, not a bit. You know, it's like, and you have to be rigorously honest. I do work in the industry. I am a bartender. I am a cocktail waitress, and I am a server. It took me a year to be able to work in the industry again, but I am around alcohol. I have gotten up to my I'm on my eighth step, and this is really hard for me. To be able to make amends with people with people who have hurt me. And I think that's the biggest, most hardest thing for me, because I thought step five was really hard. Everyone bitches about step four. We already know what happened to us. Step five, telling another human being the shit that happened, that I did.
This would be the good right.
You know what? When you go and you do your step four and you get through your step five, I swear, oh my God. There's a part, and I wish I did make notes, is when you can look the world in the eye. When you feel like you're walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Can you imagine that feeling? We can't, I sat there and I cried and I felt this just peace that I had been searching my whole life for. This emptiness that I could not figure out. And you read it on how it works, is you have to abandon yourself to God. And, you know, you guys, I don't know. Shit. How much time I got? So, if you guys have a problem understanding your higher power, I have the most unusual belief. And it is not unusual. It's almost like the most simplest belief of my creator. I know someone created us. I talked about it in the agnostics. Who are you to say there is no God? Who are you? You're going to tell me you know more than my creator? And when you read that, you're like, who the fuck am I? To question this kind of what you're doing. There's such a bigger picture that we don't know. We might not ever see it until the last day, or till we cross that path into the next part of, you know, when you die. I don't even think it's a death. I think it's a transition.
Amen.
But,
amen.
I believe that my higher power created all of us, and that I am my creator's child.
Amen.
And I have a child, and I love that. I love my kids so much, and I would never ever give my kid drugs or alcohol for them to kill himself, right? Because I love them. That I create, they have a piece of me. That's a part of my creator. Why do I do it to myself? We were hurting ourselves because we hated ourselves. We didn't know how to love ourselves. People barely know how to love us. And I learned through this book that you will, if you do the right work, you will fall so deeply in love with yourself that, you know, you will never want to put yourself in harm. I mean, you have to do the work, though. I didn't sit there in rehab in a room and stare at a wall. We had no phone, no TV, no radio. We only had fucking each other in our books. I didn't sit there and stare at that wall. I read this book. That's what I sat there and just read this book. And I just wanted to want to stop. I didn't even want to stop. I wanted to want to stop. I just couldn't get there. And it took... And I remember this. I remember my ninth day really good. I remember thinking, damn. I remember my sixth day saying, tomorrow's going to be a week. I remember my ninth day thinking, I can't believe I made fucking right to my ninth day. And then the H&I speakers, people do H&I. These are the people that spoke to me. This is the reason why I got out of that rehab and went to an AA meeting. It's because these speakers. I looked at them and thought, if that bitch's life's that fucked up, I can get my shit together.
Amen.
You know? And it's like we're, you know, your kids and they keep falling or keep fucking up. And you're like, do it again. Do it again. Do it again. See what happens. And then they learn. That's exactly what we're doing. That's exactly what we're doing. And you know what? Some of us never learn. And the most painful thing is, like, every single day before every single meeting, they say, let's have a moment of silence for the alcoholic that still suffers. I heard from my dad. Because he was sick. And this book taught me that he was sick. And he was trying his very best. He was trying to do what he could to raise me. But he was an alcoholic who was raised in a violent home. And who only knew fight, not flight. Just like I did. It was just like me. I had became the monster of my life. I became the big boy. My dad never hugged me. He never wanted me. Every time I saw my cousin sit on her dad's lap, and I remember trying to do that, and he pushed me away, like, get the fuck off me. And I remember being like, I would never forget that feeling, and I never wanted to get near my dad again. And my mom knew better, because he was an alcoholic. Never leave us with him. The moment, the day she did, and big old hell, all hell broke loose. But this book taught me to accept what had happened to me. You don't need some fucking horrible trauma to happen. It can be something that you didn't even know that was hurting you. But these things, these resentments, these are the things that block us from our higher power. If you're blocked, you're not going to see the light of the Spirit. Meaning you're not going to be able to follow the light. Where you're completely blindfolded. Because you have all these resentments. Because you have all these defects of character. Because you're just so filthy. You need to do a house cleaning. And I can't do verbatim off the book. I can't tell you what page, but I can tell you what it told me. And it told me this, that my life, it happened to me. It shaped me. I'm a survivor. Amen. I survived a very, very crazy childhood. I survived a very dangerous marriage. I am surviving from my disease. I am recovered from a hopeless state of mind, but I will always be an alcoholic. There will be not even 30 years from now, I will still be an alcoholic. I will probably say in 30 years that I still wish I could drink. And I still can't. There will never be the opportunity. Don't ever forget. It's like in a ex-abusive lover. Like, you forget all the bad shit they did and you want to go back because you remember the good times. But I tell you this, that if I felt that from the fifth step, I'm not even halfway fucking done. The promises are, they slap the shit out of you. But the one thing that I love is this peace of mind, this serenity, this acceptance that I've been given, because acceptance is the answer to all of our problems. And you all know that. We have to accept what happened. But not just that, I need to make a change in my attitude. And people are watching you. You got 5-10 years, I'm watching you. I watch when you flip the fuck out. And I think, I don't want to be like that person. Someone's always watching you. But if you are sober today, like, you need to understand that even if they don't acknowledge you. I know being sober and in recovery is not easy. No one really understands how it is to be fucking going through something that you've never felt in your life, and it feels like you're dying. It was, remember, the first things is happiness felt fucking weird. I felt like I was high on something. When I laughed, it felt funny. I was like, am I laughing right? Like, does my laugh sound like me? It was weird. It's like, who the fuck am I? I had no idea who I was. I didn't know how to feel. It felt painful to feel the way I felt. It felt like I was high to feel not high. And it was, I was not used to anything. I had to learn to cope through a lot of deaths in the past years. And I am so thankful that I got sober, because if I had not got sober, I definitely would be dead right now. I would have dragged myself through those deaths. Definitely. And I just was with my family. We just lost another person to this disease. And it was so painful because he knew and he didn't want to tell anybody. And he drank till he passed away, until he was on life support and talking with his hands and his eyes. And that's something we have to remember, is like a lot of us in this room, you might not get another chance. I am not trying to relapse. I do not want to have another sobriety date, because the way I drank, I'm not going to come back. The idea of me picking up and then starting over and doing this is very hopeful if I get the chance to come back. Because the last time I tried to get sober, it took me, I don't know how many years to come back and try to get sober. But, am I done yet?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
It's crazy, because before the meeting, she was like, well, she shared for 10 minutes, but that was awesome, and it touched me. Thank you so much. Our speaker has graciously agreed to entertain a few questions. Let's please focus any question on how the speaker's experience might enhance our recovery as we approach 10 minutes.
And I usually do it. They go from there to there. And you pick a name from there to there. Back and forth.
I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, God.
So now that you've been off alcohol for quite some time, what is your favorite part of recovery? What do you enjoy the most about it?
A lot of it is, even though I've done certain things, it feels like a completely brand new experience. And I say that because I feel like I just was born again. My way of thinking is completely different. So when I experience a new thing, my son the other day, he got ready and I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to church with you." I turned around and was like, "Oh my God." So it's like everything feels like
brand new.
Even the bad stuff, it's like you don't know. That's just new stuff. New pair of eyes. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
Do you have any morning meditations?
Actually, I love to meditate. I wish I did speak on that. I told you, I'm a spasm all over the place. But I love to meditate. If you have a really bad problem meditating, I suggest, like, go on YouTube and look at guided meditation.
Amen.
Those are my favorite. And I want you to think of this. Your meditation is your time with your higher power. You're spending time with them. So I like to, you know, say that a lot. That meditation, I believe, changed my life. I can't give you a percentage of how much that I love, that I think it changed my life, but I'm telling you that you need to learn to be able to quiet your mind, especially when havoc and chaos is happening. You need to regroup, and to be able to make the right decisions, you have to clear your mind and then make your decision. Oh, well, then first pray, and then, yeah. But yeah, that's how I meditate.
Hey, what's up? My name is Michael.
Hi,
Michael.
Hi, Michael. Can you really say the ABCs backwards?
You know what? Give me some tequila. I'm just kidding. No, I haven't done it in a while, but we could try it a little bit if you want. Yeah.
I was bartending at the Marriott before I got sober. How hard is it to bartend while remaining sober?
Well, I'll tell you this.
Can you repeat the question? Because the microphone.
Oh. Could you repeat the question?
I was bartending at the Marriott for about 3 years before I got sober. How hard is it to both bartend or remain sober?
So I didn't just jump into it. I knew how I was around it already. So I was already half, probably like step seven, a year sober. I had a sponsor. I was going to meetings a lot. And then I went to an interview, and I live with my dad now, and I'm around alcohol, and so I knew I would be okay, just because I've been in, check this out. I was going to concerts, I was going to, my friend from Texas came, they all met at the bar, I went to the bar, I had gone to restaurants, sat at the bar. My family, they're Mexican, they party like Mexicans, so I have been around, I had poured drinks, so I already knew that I was ready to be around it. It wasn't like, I'm going to go be a bartender. No, I went in there and I was like, hey, I've been a bar manager for 5 years, can I waitress here? And they're like, what the hell? But I did go back after I had done some work, and it just... Yeah, no, I don't suggest anyone to do it. I'm at a really good place. And you know what? If I just stop doing work, I can easily get too comfortable and pick up again. I have to be very, very, very on top of my sobriety, well, my recovery. Does anyone else have a question?
Hey, Ruben.
I grew up on the east side over there, too. So I know it's, are you going to block in any direction, you're going to run into somebody you know me?
Mm-hmm.
As far as your sobriety, I missed the beginning, I didn't catch how long you had, but as far as your sobriety goes, people, places, and things, do you run into people, you know, old friends or what have you, do you respect what you're doing?
The microphone's in front of you, so can you repeat his question?
Oh, repeat his question.
Yeah. So the
oh, that's what you're saying. Okay, so you're asking how...
Like, how over there, how do you deal with the people, places, and things? It's a little different over there.
Yeah, so I was... So he's asking if I... How do I deal with people and places and things now that I'm back where I was... fully functioning on my disease. I remember walking into the store right at the corner of my house and then being like, where have you been? You know? And I told them I quit drinking and I was like, I'm sorry. And they're like, oh, thank God. This is the girl at the store. And she's like, you look so good. Now I come in. We don't mention it, but that was that. My family, my mom told everyone that I was going in. But check this out. Right when I came out, I went to a birthday party. My own family was offering me smoke some weed, some coke, a drink, right, knowing I just got a rehab, like, a couple weeks ago. You know, so I was like, you got to be ready. You know, that's what this, you got to be ready. You have to have people in AA, you have to have a sponsor, you have to be going to meetings, you got to be ready for the shit, because it's going to come at you. It's going to come at you in your best day.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any more questions?
I do. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
What's up, Matt?
I too suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, and I'm on medication for it. When you were diagnosed, and how, was that a relief? And if so, how much of a relief was it? And how much does therapy play a part in your recovery life now?
Okay, do I have to repeat that question?
He's close enough.
Okay. So let me explain. Besides AA, what else I did? I was in a 90-day dual diagnose rehab. So I was, they're mainly trying to adjust my meds and get me balanced. I was so out of balance, and first you got to get sober, and then we can get me balanced, and then see where my mind's at, and then balance. So it was a fun game trying to get balanced. I still felt spiritually sick, and then just not right. I did
going to Kaiser's. I was in there inpatient, so IRP, CRG, and then I graduated from that. So I was in rehab for about 2 years.
Oh, wow.
I did outpatient, and I did therapy. I do therapy still every month, once a month, half hour. So I have not had an episode or a major depression, or I get a little hypomania, but I think that's me. I don't think it's my bipolar. I just think sometimes I get in a good mood, but I am taking my medications just like they asked me, and I feel good. I sleep just fine now. I can sleep off meds. I can go 2, 3, 4 days with no sleep, and you had no idea. But yeah, I'm taking care of myself now, and you have to.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay.
We
are now starting the discussion part of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible, so please limit your sharing to allow for this. Our format calls for the speaker to call on people to share. This allows our in-person and remote attendees to have a chance to participate. I will now turn the meeting back over to our chairperson to pick people to share.
Valerie?
All right.
Valerie!
I know her.
I know her.
Hi, my name is Valerie.
Hi, Valerie.
And I am an alcoholic. Sonia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your share. I really enjoy hearing the end part of it. I have gone through some of the things that you got through in the beginning, and I completely understand the things that you've gone through. I want to concentrate more about how you were talking about when you did become sober, how it felt when you became happy, and how it was uncomfortable. I've been experiencing that lately. Healing and sobriety can be very uncomfortable and messy sometimes. I have a difficult time dealing with my emotions. And I am familiar with suffering. It's the healing that I'm not used to.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear you say tonight, you know, that it is uncomfortable, we can get through it with the acceptance part of it. You know, that was just, you know, thank you. Thank you for your share.
Thank you, Valerie. I am going to call Lisette online.
She might be just listening.
How about Jason H. online.
Both people are still in the meeting, but I don't see any activity.
Okay.
Can I share, Sonia?
Oh, Lisette says just listening tonight.
Oh. Do you do Burning Desires? Is that cool?
Pardon?
Burning Desires? Is that... Go ahead, honey.
It's not a format.
Your name is Greg, and I'm going to call it.
Congrats.
That was some good stuff. I really appreciate it. Your share, and I can relate to mostly all of it. I can tell that you're kind of experiencing the same thing that I'm experiencing. You know, I can tell that you do your homework, and this is working for you. Not to put too much on it, I've listened to a lot of speakers, and that's probably the best speaker I've heard ever. I'm being serious. Just the way you started explaining about the book and the change and the transformation and being reborn and stuff and spending time with your higher power. I do that every morning too. I have to do that. I have to spend time with my higher power. I wake up and I tell God, you know what? I need to get clean. And I start my day off and I spend time with him and I do my morning meditation that way. No, the way I found God is was simple. It is the way I found God. It wasn't easy for me. I had to come to a conclusion where I had to get right with God, and I had to do things in His eyes in order for this to work. Right? to stop hitting my girlfriend, stop cheating, stop lying, stop stealing, stop watching porn all day long for 7 days a week, okay? I'm a strong believer that in order for this to work, in order for this to experience, is God's grace will get you so far, right? God's grace will get you so far. But like the book says, if you're sorry, you'll stop doing it. And if you do it again, if you keep on doing it, you'll drink again. Mm-hmm. That's what the book says. Acceptance is the key. I've been transformed. I've been reborn. I've been recreated, like the doctor, like Silk Road gives us theory. He also talks about, you know, me getting to stand on the firing lines with Samantha and Valerie and you fighting this, fighting the tragedies, right? Talk about the tragedies, the little children, the despairing wives. You know what despair is? Mm-hmm. Despair is loneliness. Despair is hopeless. That's what I come from. I come from, it's like she was in the fucking house and she had to get back out there. You know, when I was in the penitentiary, I had to get back out there. I had to get that next high. You know, I know what it's like to be in the alley searching for a vein. I know what it's like to drink myself into a hole where I have to get myself out of. For me, this is all or nothing. There's nobody too sick here, or nobody too discredited here to be added to this fellowship. That means nobody in this room is fucked up too bad to be added to the list. And you guys want to know how she gets to go around on Paul? The book tells her that she's able to go around on Paul. Tells me right there in Vision 3, it says I can go anywhere on this earth without a bodyguard. Yeah. As long as I keep a certain attitude. As long as I'm willing to stop being a pussy bitch, wake up, pray to God, do the steps, take the mask off, and you're working through 4 or 5, right? She's right. She can look everybody in the room now. She can also be trusted, and she can trust people too. You know, when she was talking up there, I was getting this, like, I was experiencing a spiritual awakening again. Like I got, like I just wanted to yell and stuff, because this is why I come to a meeting like this, so I can get the good stuff. Yeah, I don't care if he wants your kids back, or he wants to fucking go get a job. I want to know what I need to do if my wife leaves me, or my wife dies, or, you know, my kid gets hit by a fucking car tomorrow. Yeah. Or I get lazy like she talked about. Yeah, if she gets lazy and she stops doing all of her shit, the book talks about it. You're going to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
The obsession's been lifted indeed, but you gotta, you know, you just don't do this for a while and start tramping again. It just don't work like that. it just don't work like that. We don't graduate here, you guys.
Nope.
This is a lifetime commitment.
Mm.
And eventually, when you guys go through the steps, you gotta take other people through the steps. I was talking to some gentlemen today, like. I bring in the book today with my sponsor that we want everybody to get the same help as we got. That's how this thing works, right? The solution to alcohol is the fellowship, the camaraderie. You guys know why I come here for? Because Bill loves me. Hmm. Because somebody cares about me. Right?
Yeah.
I need my medicine, man. And that too. You know what I'm saying? You know, Bill W., he talks about it in his story. He says, you guys heard the saying, it gets better and better. Well, they took that from Bill W. Bill W. says, this is a way of life more incredibly wonderful as time passes by.
Mm-hmm.
It's as clean as the wind blowing through 2 mountaintops.
Mm.
Hold on, it gets better. The wind is a spirit.
Mm.
I've entered the spirit world. This is the only way it works. You can't play God here. You're not going to get the spiritual awakening until he gives it to you. I don't have the power to fucking make the magic happen or when it happens. It's up to you, and you know who.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ifs, ands, buts, or whats about it. There's no fucking, you know, there's no tricks here that Sonya hasn't told you or Samantha's told you that's going to keep you sober. It has something to do with you, and you know who. Yeah. I told you guys this before. Are you going to loan me money if I stole your car? Are you? No. And if I keep on stealing from your house, can I keep on going back there? No. He's not going to be loyal to you unless you're loyal to him. It just don't work like that. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. Oh, we have a question on Zoom.
Thank you.
Yeah, it has to do with you going through trauma with your home, like with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how you were raised, with so much violence, and, you know, going into another abusive relationship with your ex-husband. Was it for you, like, were you drinking to cope with all that? Like, with the traumas, like, from when you were smaller and all that?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I learned that, you know, if I was drunk, I care less. And so if I got smacked around or anything, I just end up walking to the store and grabbing me a couple 99s, drop them, and then lay down and go to sleep. But yeah, that was my way of coping all my life.
I hope your relationship's better with your dad now. Like, has it got better, or like, is he cool, or
what I was saying earlier in my share is that the book taught me to understand that my dad is sick, and my dad is sick in his disease, and he's trying his very best. He could just left us and had us figure it out on our own, but he works and he drinks and passes out, and I don't judge him. I feel pity for my dad, and so it took a lot of work and to accept my dad the way he is. But it was easy to do it when I understood how it is to be an alcoholic mom. That I love my son. I was just sick at the time.
And you're in a healthy relationship now, right? Like, you're not.
Oh, yeah. No. I advise, if you are fresh in just your first year, even second year, I do advise you not to get into any deep relationships, even sexual relationships your first year. I strongly advise that anything that hits you in the gut, you think you got it together, you're going to, it might cause you to drink. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I will call on, is it Jaime?
I'll start over.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Jaime, alcoholic.
Hey,
I really appreciate your sharing. You talked a lot about acceptance today, and I don't know, man. There's days like today where I was able to wake up, do the same thing I did yesterday, right? Go down to my sister's and enjoy Easter with my daughter. For the first time in, shit, like 4 years, she's 5, right? It's days like today that make me appreciate this fucking program. It's like, Grant, dude, this is a whole, it's a way of living that I could deal with, right? Powerful shit here, man. When you describe the steps, your step 5, I had the same experience working step 5. Went up to the mountains, up to Kauai, and worked the step 5, and I came back a different man.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There was a weight lifted off my shoulders, and I experienced a peace that I can't describe. You described it pretty well. Right? I've been coasting, coasting and sort of just rolling with it, right? Grant said it, the acceptance is the key, right? That's on page 420 for you potheads out here. Remember, 420, the second to last paragraph. Says acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today, right? That's powerful shit. So as long as I'm able to roll with it, accept life as it is, right? I don't fight it. I have a pretty good chance of not picking up a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And for me too, I like the Cristal, right? I call it Cristal.
Fancy.
Fancy around
Pinky up.
But it was always alcohol, right? The first time I ever did any of that stuff was when I was drunk. I have a scar to prove it right here. First time I hit a pipe, right? I thought I was wearing a long sleeve after I hit it, and I went to wipe it. First time I ever did it. I looked at it, and I'm like, there it is. It's always with the little alcohol. I can maintain for a little bit, right? I'm functioning too. But one too many, hey, one too many, and I'm right back at it to the stuff my body craves, right? That bullshit. And, you know, I'm very glad for days like today, like I was saying. It was a beautiful day. Tomorrow I get the chance to wake up and do the same thing
That's
I did today.
Right. That's right.
With a pretty good chance that I won't pick up. You know, and that's the whole point of this thing. So, thank you.
Thank you. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If anyone is in need of a sponsor or is available to be a sponsor, or if you are interested in being of service with this